Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by Urbanite, Baltimore's free monthly magazine of ideas and innovation. This month, it's Consumption Issue, with holiday tales about spending, saving, and the true price of American consumerism. Urbanite is available at over 800 locations. Visit www.urbanitebaltimore.com for a list of drop locations. And we have a discussion about that consumerism with Annie Leonard tomorrow here at 6 o'clock. It was going to be today, but something took precedence over that discussion, Urbanite discussion with Annie Leonard. And that was the Mayor Sheila Dixon's trial is done. And the verdict was handed in. And we have a panel to talk about that this hour. We are joined in studio by my dear friend Anthony McCarthy, host of the Anthony McCarthy Show every Friday from 5 to 7 p.m. In this time slot, Cheryl Wood is with us once again. Cheryl Wood is a criminal defense attorney and owner of the Wood Law Firm, former state and federal prosecutor. Cheryl, lovely to have you back in the studio.
Great to see you, Mark.
And Paul Sandler, back in the studio again as well, a trial lawyer and partner in the Baltimore, D.C. firm of Shapiro, Sher, Gwinnow, and Sandler. And do we have any more guests? That's it for now. Oh, Melody's on the phone. Melody Simmons. How can I forget you, Melody? Melody Simmons, who is reporter for the Mark Steiner Show, WEAA, and the Center for Emerging Media. We've been covering this trial every day, neglecting her children. No, I'm just kidding. But covering the trial every day for us here. 410-319-8888. Your thoughts on the outcome of this trial? Write to us at steinershow@gmail.com. Log on to the Mark Steiner Show Facebook page. You become a friend instantly. I'll be watching the page. And enter the conversation there that's really long, or go to Anthony McCarthy's page, and they're having a major conversation on his Facebook page as well. And we'll try to read all those comments here on the air and see what all of you are thinking. Melody.
Yes.
Let me start with you.
Okay.
Give us your... I'd like to hear you tell us a couple of things. One was your observations of Mayor Sheila Dixon when this count went down, just on a very human level, and also your conversations with some of the jurors. So take us a bit through that.
Well, it was a fascinating day, very stunning for Mayor Dixon. The jury came through with a verdict around noon, and when they came in and started to make the pronouncements, the mayor's just stood up, of course, and looked straight ahead as though she were a statue. She was stunned to hear the word guilty. She had a lot of supporters, a lot of aides in the courtroom, and they as well were stunned. And just, you know, there was a lot of press in the room, and the press left, of course, to begin filing the stories. I myself stayed in to try to get some reaction from the mayor herself. She was so surprised she could hardly move. She and her attorneys huddled in a corner, and during that time, there was not a sound made in the courtroom. It was, you could have heard a pin drop. So it was very dramatic and very sad for the mayor at the time. The prosecutors picked up their things and left and went outside and held a brief press conference. So there was a lot of action going on at the lunchtime hour. We finally were able to speak with some of the jurors who came walking down the sidewalk a good hour after they had pronounced the verdict, and basically said that there was a lot of debate back and forth. There was some good humor in the room, but there was also a lot of debate, got heated at times, as expected with a trial of this gravity. And basically one of the jurors told me, if you do the crime, you have to do the time. So it came down to a little bit of a law and order stance for the jury, and they realized that Mayor Dixon, the jurors we spoke with had voted for her, but they realized that the evidence was stacked up against her.
The evidence was stacked up against her, though, the only...
For that one count,
for
yes.
For that one count.
Mm-hmm. These were the gift cards from Patrick Turner, who is a very wealthy developer, this wasn't mentioned in court, but basically has gotten tons of tax breaks from the city. This was not, the dots were not connected on that. And Mayor Dixon and then President of the City Council Dixon voted on those tax breaks. And so what the prosecution put forward and the jury convicted on was the fact that she made a phone call to Patrick Turner, asked for these gift cards at Christmas time for needy children in the city, and then in the raid of the mayor's home, they found some of the items that were purchased with the gift card, traced them back through the use of the gift cards, which all have a serial number on them,
right,
and the mayor's use of her reward zone card and the receipt. So they, you know, they pretty had a... They had a very tight case on that.
Maybe turn the two attorneys in our room with us here and get their take. Cheryl Wood first.
Well, Mark and Melody, I think that I said before about the Patrick Turner counts that that was the most difficult part of the case. The Holly Trolley cards, she could have misplaced. She could explain away. I had a few in my house. I accidentally gave one to an employee. That could be explained away a little more. And I think the jury was concerned about what period of time they would have to be in her house for it to be theft. And there were concerns there. But the Patrick Turner counts were more difficult. I think they didn't find her guilty of theft because the language about theft is so harsh, the statutory language, and that's not something that they felt comfortable finding her guilty of. But Patrick Turner testified in a very credible manner. To see him, to be in the courtroom, and to see the manner in which he testified, he was very uncomfortable. He didn't want to say too much. In fact, he didn't say needy children. He said children. He didn't say the mayor called him and asked for the cards. He said he didn't remember if they were at a party or an event or if she called. He couldn't remember what they talked about in the conversation right before he bought the cards and right after. He said as little as possible. He was very uncomfortable. He was credible. In fact,
he was a hostile witness as well, even though he was prosecution, but he was.
Exactly. Like many of the witnesses, he was a hostile witness. He's friends with the mayor. His wife is friends with the mayor. So there was nothing to discredit what he said, though, what he was willing to say and what the paperwork showed, the records show. He was not discredited. So unless the jury disregarded his testimony, what were they to do with that?
Paul?
I look at it, Mark, from the point of view of the jury. And I am always impressed with our jury system in this country. It's unique. No other country has a trial by jury system as broad as we do in the United States of America. Not in England, not in France, Okay. Nowhere. And I think that the jurors oftentimes, and in this case, are very courageous because I think it was very difficult. It was very sad. No one rejoices, I hope, in what the outcome revealed. But it's very difficult when you like someone, and it's clear she's more than a likable person. She's charismatic as a leader who's doing a fine job as mayor. But it's very difficult to come to terms with some of this evidence. So I'm very proud of the system, not that I agree or disagree with the verdict, but just the manner in which it took place. We shouldn't lose sight of that.
Anthony?
I think there are several things. First of all, Mark, I was a little bit surprised by my actual reaction to the verdict.
What do you mean?
It was very troubling to me. It was heartbreaking to me. I shed many a tear today, thinking back on not only the relationship I had with this mayor when I worked for her, but the implications of this verdict. Very broad implications, regardless of the mayor's statement and her determination to stay. I think something was lost by this mayor today in the eyes of the people who voted for her, including some of these jurors. What we did find out today, which I think is also worth stating, that the jurors are saying they actually made the decision on the conviction last week. They had moved and already decided unanimously that they were going to find her guilty of this count before they even went for their Thanksgiving break. Mm-hmm. And so I think that there was so much speculation on the public's part and by our part about what was going on in there. At the end of the day, the speculation doesn't mean anything because what we are now faced with and what we're left with is, can this mayor continue? And we're going to talk obviously about the constitutional ramifications, but can she, with this conviction, have the faith of the people of this city and continue moving forward? I think that's up for a great debate right now. If you read online what people are saying on our Facebook pages, as well as some of the media outlets, WBAL or the Baltimore Sun, it's a mixed bag. I think a lot of people are very stunned. We're almost shocked right now about where we go. But the mayor's office is very clear on where she's going. She's determined that she is going to stay in office.
And one thing the mayor did right after the conviction, she went back to City Hall. She said she was going to prepare for a budget hearing, but she promptly threw the press out of City Hall and shut it down to the public and the press. And so, you know, that's a kind of strange reaction that you get, and that's the kind of thing that puts salt on a giant wound.
Well,
a huge mistake, I believe,
to shut City Hall down. I think that it's clear this jury, my sense is many of these people in this jury did not want to see the mayor go nor convict the mayor. But, and the compromise, and there were some in the jury who did want to convict her.
A majority, obviously, wanted to convict her. I think we know that, right, Cheryl? A majority of the jury, there were three that were holding out for this last conversation. The rest of the jury was in favor of, well, not conviction, but had made up their determination.
Based on the evidence.
Based on the evidence.
That's important.
Right. So I think it's important for us not to say a majority of the jury didn't want to convict her. I don't think that's true.
Okay. Well, it depends what you mean by want. No one, I would think, would want to convict the mayor because of she's likable, it's difficult, and it's hard, it's controversial. But overcoming what their personal predilections were, they followed the judge's instructions, apparently, and did their job of focusing on the facts.
Well, Mayor Shields, this is a statement. I guess people have heard it, maybe they haven't. I'll read the statement that came out of the mayor's office just now. Not just now, a couple hours ago. Today, I thank God for the strength he has given me. I want to thank my family for their undying support and all of my staff, supporters, and friends for the countless prayers and encouraging words. Thank you for standing by me. The jury verdict today does not impact my responsibility to continue serving, and I remain focused on keeping Baltimore on course in these trying economic times. I want the people of this great city to know that my administration is fortunate to have a talented and dedicated team of professionals running city agencies and departments. Like me, my team remains focused on the everyday business of the city. I am blessed with the opportunity to serve the people of Baltimore. Now, the question I have is, since she's been convicted...
She hasn't been convicted.
Since she was found guilty.
Right, because I think our listeners should appreciate it's technical, but under the law, one is not convicted until sentencing.
Right. Okay. But
she was found guilty.
She was found guilty. Right. That is correct.
So can she stay in office? How long can she stay in office? There's been real controversy of this and all these other shows I've been listening to and people writing. What do we know? What do you all know about this? And we have a lot of people calling in. But let me first turn to the three of you. Byron Warnkin from Baltimore Law School has just joined us. Byron, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Hi, Mark.
Let's get your three takes on what the Constitution says. When does she have to leave? One attorney said to me today, when she is convicted and sentenced, she has to go. Others saying they could fight this and keep it on appeal, and she might not walk out the door. That if the case that the governor has powers in Article 11 to remove her if she doesn't move and appoint a new mayor, as I was talking to his press secretary a little while ago about this. So let me start with you, Paul, then we'll go to Byron and then over to Cheryl.
Well, my take on it is when you look at the Constitution, you see clearly a provision that's entitled suspension and removal of convicted officials. So when you read the Constitution...
This is the state Constitution, not the Baltimore
Maryland,
City Charter.
Maryland
state
Constitution. When you examine the constitutional provision, when an individual during the term of office is convicted of any crime, which is a felony or which is a misdemeanor related to public duties and responsibilities and involves moral turpitude, for which the penalty may be jail, shall be suspended by operation of law without pay or benefits from the elective official. Now, let's examine what that means. If you read this provision, one is convicted when they are sentenced, not when they are found guilty.
Right.
So at the moment, I do believe under the law, she has the right, not necessarily the political correct judgment, but the right to remain in office. Then, once she is sentenced, if she is deemed to have been found convicted of a crime, which is a felony or misdemeanor, and we know it's a misdemeanor.
Is it a misdemeanor? I thought it was a felony.
It is a misdemeanor.
It's a misdemeanor, Mark. It's just, that's the law. It's a misdemeanor.
Oh, I thought over $500.
The theft would have been a felony.
Oh, okay. But this was not, she was not convicted of theft, so it was not a felony.
That's
now
correct.
I understand. I misunderstood earlier.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry. Right.
So we have the misdemeanor to examine. Is this misdemeanor related to public duties? Now, one could say no, but I think a fair reading is that it has to be because that's what it was. And does it involve moral turpitude for which a penalty may be incarceration? Now, the definition of moral turpitude should be of interest to listeners because what it really means, does it involve morality and ethics and fraud, the knowing, lying, or misbehaving in a way that is a moral issue, as opposed to, say, a certain crime that might not involve intent or morality.
Well, let me, Byron, do you have one thought on this?
Yes. First, I completely agree with Paul Mark Sandler, not only because he's brilliant, because he was my law professor in 1975.
Yeah, well, now you make me reveal my age.
I agree with Paul. One, convicted is a term of art. There's an AG's opinion, Attorney General's opinion from 1977 relating to Delegate George Santoni. And in that opinion, now it's only an opinion, it's not the law, but it's an opinion from the highest law officer in the state, is that you needed to be convicted, meaning a finding of guilt and a sentence thereon. Plus, there's a case in a different context that holds that in Maryland you have to be found guilty and sentenced before you get conviction. So I agree with Paul. We don't know when sentencing is. It hasn't been set yet, but typically it's about 60 days later. Number two, Paul's correct. It is a misdemeanor. However, that's not important because I agree with Paul that any argument that this misdemeanor, which because it's only a misdemeanor, must be in connection with the public duties and responsibilities, it would be a very tough argument, I agree with Paul, for somebody to say that this misdemeanor was not. As to the moral turpitude, I again agree with Paul. There's a Court of Appeals case dealing with a guy named a disbarment of a guy named Andreessen, and found that the crime of a misappropriation by a fiduciary was a crime of moral turpitude. The operation of law statement proves that it happens automatically the very second she is sentenced. We don't have to do any other procedures. She's out of office. Now, there is some argument, and I think you might have mentioned it earlier, that there's another article. Everything we're talking about is Article 15, Section 2 of the Maryland Constitution, which went into effect in 1974. There is an Article 11, Section 6,
right,
which suggests that the governor has the power if certain things happen. However, when two things are in conflict, and I don't know that they are, but if they are, the legislatures are deemed to know the law. So therefore, if two things are in conflict, the newer would control over the earlier. So therefore, I don't think Article 11, Section 6 applies.
So we can assume that she's going to remain here until she goes back to court to get...
Yes.
And then let's open the phones right after this. Go ahead.
Well, one point about sentencing. I was in court today when the verdict was read. And afterwards, the judge said that he, there would be no date set for sentencing right now, that she has another trial coming up, so there was really no rush to sort of sentence. So that indicated to me that trial is not until March. He did not set a date, but he did say she has another trial coming up. No reason to set a date for sentencing right now. So that indicates that he may be waiting. And he also gave the government until Friday to decide if they would retry her on the count 6, which was the hung jury
wow.
count. So they have until they gave themselves. They said we can know by the end of this week. So there's a number of issues still in play here with regards to sentencing. The judge may not sentence her until after the second trial. But of course, I'm sure we'll talk about this. There could be some negotiations obviously going on between the prosecution and the defense about whether there will even be another trial, certainly whether she would be retried for count 6, and, you know, how we would move forward from here.
And let's remember, she also has appeal rights.
She has appeal rights.
And if she is convicted or sentenced, she's not evicted from office permanently. She's only suspended.
Melody, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
I know you have to roll.
Yes.
So final thought for you before you have to take off, which is heard.
My final thoughts are the city seems to be reeling over it. I've done some polling, just talking to people out on the street.
Right.
And this has left a huge scar on the city at this time. And I think legally, there's a lot of arguments to be made as these as the attorneys and the legal side of the panel has talked about. But there's also an emotional side. There's also the spiritual side. And that's what's bruised right now. And a lot of people are trying to sort this out, figure it out, They're torn because, yes, they realize the mayor was found guilty and they realize the evidence, but they also realize that she actually was a good mayor and she is a good mayor and she has had a good track record, hit the ground running since Martin O'Malley went down to the governor's mansion. So there's a lot of food for thought here. the whole picture.
And there are a lot of people calling in. Let me get a few thoughts before we go to break here from our listeners at 410-319-8888. Melody Simmons, thank you so much for all the work you've done during this trial. And we'll see you and talk to you tomorrow.
Yes, indeed. Thank you so much.
Thanks
good
so much.
All.
Thank you. 410-319-8888 is the number here. Aaron in Baltimore, you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi, Aaron.
You know, quite frankly, I'm glad that she was convicted today, to be honest with you, because, quite frankly, she deserved it. If those cards, it's clear that she did wrong things with them. And quite frankly, the way she's led our city, in my view, leads me to believe that she deserves everything she gets.
All right. Aaron, I think that's an opinion that you're not alone in out there. Many people have uttered those same. Let's go to the next caller, 410-319-8888. Oh, it's Doc Cheatham. Doc, you're on the air. Hi, Doc, you're on the air. Doc, you there?
Yes, I'm there. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we got you.
Thank you so much for taking my call. Let's first agree to this, that there is no previous case law dealing with a mayor being found guilty. There is no previous rendering of any case law in the history of Maryland dealing with a mayor, an opinion being rendered with reference to the mayor. What we asked for 2 months ago is where we are today, sadly enough, that we asked the Attorney General to look at the situation, what would happen if a mayor were convicted. Does it go to the Maryland State Constitution? Does it go to the Baltimore City Charter? We said very clearly we hadn't a clue because we weren't attorneys. But what we did know was that at some point the Attorney General was going to have to be asked, because you can't ask the city solicitor to do such because he works for the mayor. We're actually where we asked the Attorney General 2 months ago to look at this very carefully, because we have what we have today. We have someone, and we say, you know, it's a sad day for the city of Baltimore. But right now, we're in this quagmire because no one decided, including our senators and delegates, because not one of them had the gumption to ask the Attorney General, who represents them, to look at this situation and render an opinion. So now we are today. We don't know how long the mayor can stay in office because there's nothing in writing.
Well, the city solicitor wrote it. What he put out.
He can't write that, Mark.
Pardon?
What'd
you say, Doc?
The city solicitor can't write law.
No. I'm just saying what his statement was today. His interpretation. What he said was the jury's verdict today does not impact the mayor's responsibility to continue serving as mayor of the city of Baltimore at this time. The mayor will continue to focus on citizen concerns and the business of the city until the case comes to a legal conclusion, which is what Paul Sandler was saying and the other attorneys in the room, that once she's convicted, then she can't stay, according to the state constitution.
And that's why we contend that we knew what we saw was vague enough for just a layman. And knowing how many attorneys we have, and each one of them, we've heard at least 11 different opinions from different attorneys who looked at the state constitution and the city charter, and many of them came away with different opinions. And I would say not one person right now can tell us at what point in time does a mayor come out.
I can tell you.
Tell us, where is it cited?
I will tell you.
Where is it cited? When she comes out as a result of what she got convicted for?
Paul?
If you look at the Maryland Constitution, it's very clear.
15-2?
I beg your pardon? Yes.
15-2?
Yes. She remains in office, Doc, until she's sentenced. Then, upon sentencing, she is suspended. During the course of her appeals, she is suspended without pay. If the appeal is affirmed, she, by operation of law, is out of office. She's removed.
And
there's then a vacancy. If not, she goes back to be reinstated. Her suspension ends, and she fulfills her elected term.
Let me take it a step further. And I agree with Paul and Doc. I think that she's suspended, and during the suspension, automatic succession takes place, and that's where the city charter comes in, and the president of the city council
steps in
automatically
as acting mayor.
Succeeds the mayor according to the city charter.
But she's acting mayor.
She would be acting mayor until,
right,
as Paul said, if the conviction becomes final after judicial review and appeal, then the elected official, the mayor, would be removed. If the conviction is reversed or overturned, she would be reinstated. And get back pay.
I'm sorry. And get back pay if she's reinstated. Let me, before we go to break here, apparently Tom Moore, who does a legal commentary, is on the phone as well. Tom, you want to join us for a minute? What are your thoughts? Do we have Tom there?
Great to join the panel tonight, Mark. Great to hear from you and my own law professor, Professor Warnken. Nice to hear from you, sir.
Everybody's studying with somebody here on the panel. But so what are your thoughts very quickly?
You know, I think Pat Turner's testimony was the most convincing. I listened to some of the jurors today when I was doing some analysis on WBAL-TV, and basically they said they didn't think that Pat Turner had any axe to grind. He was a guy who said that, you know, begrudgingly, well, yeah, I thought they were supposed to be for charity, and then here we find out that they weren't used for charity.
We covered that at the top of the show, yeah.
Yeah, but in terms of the topic about whether she's removed, she'll be suspended, and I think, professors, that goes to the definition of suspended. Does that mean she steps down right away? I think it does it not? She stops serving in the capacity of the mayor, doing the...
When she's sentenced, when she's convicted
when
and sentenced.
Correct, yeah.
That could be months. That could be months.
That's our issue.
That could be months.
That's what we've said, yes.
That's our issue.
Right. That's what did you say? That's your issue, Doc?
That's specifically our issue. Is there is no specific time. The judge could indicate he can do it before the next trial. He could decide to do it after the next trial.
Right.
Right now, that's an open issue.
Well, no, what I'm saying, but it isn't an open issue because we know it's the law. We know that when she is convicted and sentenced, she has to step down. She can appeal and maybe get her job back, but she has to step down, and the President City Council by City Charter takes over. But the only question is for the judge to answer, and only he can answer this question, is when the sentencing takes place. It could take place next week. It could take place before Christmas. It could take place in January. It might not take place after the next trial, if there is another trial. So he may be waiting to see what the prosecutor is saying. And we're going to take a break, and I think it's time to go talk about, when we come back from this break, the political implications of what happens over the next weeks and months, and the opinions of some of the people who've written in about what they think the real politics of this trial is about. 410-319-8888. We'll come back to the phones. Peter, you're the next caller up. And if your question is, can Dixon stay in office? I think we've answered that. But we want to hear other thoughts and comments at 410-319-8888. The Mark Steiner, well, I'll do that credit when I come back. Welcome back. I'm Mark Steiner, and the Mark Steiner Show is made possible by the University of Maryland Women's Health for every stage of a woman's life, offering compassionate care and comprehensive obstetric and gynecological services from routine exams to specialized pelvic surgery. More information at 1-800-492-5538 or go to www.umm.edu/Women's Center. We are joined to talk about now the politics of all this. I want you to join us at 410-319-8888. We want to hear the citizens' thoughts of all of our listeners, not just the citizens of Baltimore, to think about what this means and why it happened and what the mayor should do next. Byron Warkin's on the phone. He's an associate professor of law at the University of Maryland School of Law.
University of Baltimore.
Did I say Maryland? Excuse me, Byron. I didn't mean to move you over across town. Paul Sandler's with us, who's a trial attorney and partner in the Baltimore D.C. firm of Shapiro, Scher, Gwinnow, and Sandler. Cheryl Wood, who is a criminal defense attorney, owner of the Wood Law Firm, former state and federal prosecutor. Anthony McCarthy, host of the Anthony McCarthy Show, here Fridays at 5 to 7 p.m. on WEAA. Number is 410-319-8888. So let's talk about the implications here. And Anthony, you said during the break that you didn't think the mayor could survive this. Spiritually, she what you said.
I think what I said was is I understand the legal ramifications that everybody's talking about. Yeah. I said, but there's another point here. I'm not sure if she can survive the court of public opinion. And I said the public may, in fact, regardless of her legal options, staying until sentencing, not staying until sentencing, being able to go on suspension and then coming back. I think all of that is very important. And I know that's what attorneys do. That's what they're supposed to be talking about. But if we look at the other side of this, there is a public aspect of this where the public needs to ask themselves, and Sheila Dixon needs to ask herself, what is in the best interest of the people of this city? And would it be going through all these legal, whether they are appropriate or not appropriate, these legal maneuvers or not? Can she continue to govern with the faith of the citizens? That is the question. And I think that the court of public opinion can be even more harsh than the ramifications that we're watching. We're hearing from Byron and Cheryl and others. I think that we have to see what's going to happen within the next couple of days when it comes to the people's confidence in this mayor. And I think that's going to, and then Sheila Dixon, the mayor of this city, has to make a determination. Do I take the citizens of this city through this protracted situation of a suspension, another trial? And as Cheryl pointed out, there are negotiations going on, maybe not right now, but will in the next couple of days between the prosecution and the defense about where do we go from here. There's a lot at stake for Sheila Dixon. So I understand the importance of all these legal options, but there is a political, if this is what I want to say that I was avoiding saying, if the cry for the mayor to be removed from office becomes so loud, the public will push her out of office regardless of what her legal options are.
Any thoughts on that very quick before you open the phones here? I really want to get to our listeners.
Well, I think that is certainly a very important factor, the court of public opinion, as we discussed. But let's remember, she is an individual who is entitled to legal rights. She has the right for her attorneys to file any post-trial motions.
Right, but...
And she may feel, based upon advice of counsel, that there's a likelihood of reversal.
But there's a difference here between her legal rights, Cheryl Wood and Byron Workin, and what makes sense for governing the city.
But who decides that? The people? They've already elected her, and maybe her view is that this is wrong, I will be able to have this overturned and then can be the best mayor again. Now, I'm not saying that that is something I would advocate, okay, but we have to respect her rights as well.
Sure.
Well, I think this is it's difficult to accept. I mean, we just had this verdict today. I think everyone, many in the courtroom were shocked to hear it at this point because it was very difficult to follow the jury for all these days of deliberation. And I had always thought at the beginning, and just as a guess, like anyone else, that there might be one count that they would find her guilty of. And I always thought the Patrick Turner counts were a problem. But as I sat in the courtroom today and actually heard the guilty verdict, I mean, my reaction, I don't know the mayor personally. I don't have, as Anthony does, but I had tears in my eyes and just a pain in my stomach because this, just to see this, was very, very difficult. And I say that to say that I know it has to be very difficult for the mayor right now to decide what to do. And this goes to Doc's point, and he makes a good point. There isn't a specific timeline where, you know, we're here and we're kind of, we don't know what's going to happen. Even the successor doesn't know when or whether she'll step in. She can't really prepare. It is very unsettling, and I don't think we can expect that people can react. The mayor is an individual, as Paul said. It's difficult to react right now. I think in a few days, when the public opinion is out there more, that she'll have an opportunity to react better. But I think, you know, knee-jerk reaction, it's difficult for her to do.
And certainly time for transition is important.
Byron?
And it may be that although she has the legal option, from a public policy standpoint, there may be something introduced in the legislature coming up where a legislator would want to suggest that if someone is found guilty of a crime of moral turpitude by 12 people unanimously beyond a reasonable doubt, at that point in time, that person should not be serving in public office.
But
I don't take a position on it, but that would be an argument. That's not the law under the current Constitution, which is why there might be some suggestion to change the Constitution. And just like we saw the city's reaction today, you know, 12 jurors were out. Most people, I included, really didn't know where they were coming from, just as there would have been a very different reaction had those 12 unanimously gone the other way than with the guilty verdict. What's going to happen if on appeal the Court of Special Appeals were to rule that Judge Sweeney made a prejudicial ruling that harmed the defense, and therefore the appellate court loses faith in the verdict. In other words, will we be back on this roller coaster again where now she's presumed to be innocent again? Of course, the problem is if she takes her appellate rights, and, you know, Paul and I can tell you, any lawyer is going to advise her, if we can find anything in a 1,000-page transcript, you can probably find some error that the judge made. Can it get a conviction overturned? Possibly. About 1 in 8 gets overturned in Maryland. But it's going to take about 15 months. It takes 15 to 18 months to get a conviction overturned. So the legal process does not go rapidly.
410-319-8888. Let's turn to our listeners here. And, Peter, you've been holding on for a while. You're on the air. Peter, you there?
Can you hear me?
Peter, you're on the air.
Yes. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, we have an animal criminal sentencing in Maryland called probation before judgment, which is not a conviction. So my question is, if Mayor Dixon is eligible for a probation before judgment and Judge Sweeney gives it to her, that would not be a conviction under Maryland law, and therefore would she be able to remain as mayor?
You've asked the right question because you are right.
He's absolutely correct.
A probation before judgment is not a criminal conviction. And if everything we've been saying is correct, and I think Paul and I have been in agreement, and what the Attorney General's opinion says, if it requires a conviction and that requires a sentence, if in lieu of a sentence she gets a probation before judgment, it certainly creates an argument that her conviction went away. Just like if her lawyers file a motion for a new trial tomorrow and it gets granted, she's going to be back to square one.
In fact, the purpose of PBJ, as we call it in the trade, is to save someone's criminal record. And once they fulfill their probationary period, then they are their record is allowed to be expunged. But let's look at it realistically. What is the likelihood of a trial judge taking that type of view in this type of case? One never knows.
But there
is that possibility, which, Byron, as always, you beat me to the punch, because I was thinking that as well when our caller asked, or when you suggested earlier that maybe upon a finding of guilt, a legislator might devise a plan to have someone suspended. But that would then deprive the person of an opportunity to have a sentence that would not be of a moral turpitude.
Cheryl?
Well, I think the likelihood, you know, as Paul sort of indicated, of a probation before judgment sentence here that has her not have the conviction under the Constitution and would just allow her to stay in office is very low. And I think, and Paul, you know, you've said you've had, you know, much experience before this judge. And I think, you know, this judge has indicated in his side comments that, you know, he thinks the case is serious. He made some, you know, talked about, you know, what are they called? Gift cards flowing from City Hall. You know, what's going on here? And I don't think this judge is going to allow that to happen. There would have to be some sort of deal where the mayor would leave office. Maybe she could get probation before judgment, but I think they'd have to work that sort of deal in order for it to happen. I don't think it'll just happen and she just stays in office.
Well, there are two extremes.
You want to say something, Anthony?
No, I'm good.
You were really contemplating something here.
No, I think that as I listen to these legal arguments, they are so important. And I understand, as Paul said, that we need to look at her as an individual. But I believe that when the public comes out of its shock, because they're shocked right now, and this is making headlines around the country, this story of the mayor's conviction, and we keep correcting that, but in the minds of the people of this city,
she was convicted
today. Right. And so I think it's very important as we begin to hear from the most important, not in the mayor's case, but the most important people to the mayor, which are the citizens of this city. I think there may be judgments that she needs to seriously begin contemplating that are beyond her legal options.
No, I agree. But I just wanted to point out that she's also facing, remember, we haven't talked about this, but the penalty for this offense is
5 years. Up
to 5 years. So you might have probation before judgment on one hand. You may have 5 years on the other.
With all respect to our listeners, let's go back to their questions and read an email, then go back to the phones. Sarah writes in, Dear Mark, Sheila Dixon's trial and conviction strikes me as a modern-day epic Shakespearean tragedy. Sheila Dixon is a remarkable woman who has proven to be a great mayor of Baltimore. Our city is a better place because of her leadership. Unfortunately, she had a fatal flaw. A petty crime is her downfall, resulting in both a personal and public tragedy. Backdrop to this epic is the irony that so many more damaging crimes, quote unquote, like those committed in last year's on Wall Street, go unpunished. Was it appropriate use of public funds for the prosecutor's office to spend millions of dollars to uncover this petty crime? I grieve and yet find myself sympathetic with the jurors. And I have an email discussion on my Facebook page, and what I wrote there, I'll just read that because it's very similar. And I think this is part of the thing we have to wrestle with a little bit. Mayor Sheila Dixon was convicted on one count. Is this all the state prosecutor could come up with after 4 years? Specious case, waste of money, but in the end, Dixon's ethical behavior, her sense of entitlement, and the arrogance of power brought her down. Taking gift cards meant for the poor is at best unseemly. Sad day for the city.
I agree with you, Mark. I just agree. I think you summed it up right there. So very sad. And people walking the streets of the city, people who were stopping us as I was going and doing interviews at some of the television stations and other places today, people are of mixed emotions right now. They really do question the sense of this trial, but they are angry. There's some anger about Sheila Dixon allowing this gift card, this gift card situation and culture at City Hall to actually become so entrenched that it took down a mayor who, by all accounts, is doing a remarkable job. She's tainted regardless.
Every defendant who is convicted of a crime has a story. They have husbands or wives, children that will be deprived of their presence. Mm-hmm. And it's very difficult to understand how all this comes together, except if we keep in mind one fundamental principle. If you are a public official or a responsible person, if you're a radio broadcaster, if you're a lawyer, you have burdens and obligations of responsibility. And you set standards for others.
Well, that's part of the problem. The standard, when you have a mayor, I don't care if she thought the cards were for her. The larger issue people are wrestling with in the city is, I think, what is the man or woman we elected to be mayor of the city of Baltimore doing accepting gift cards from developers who do business with the city? I mean, that's one of the reasons people in Baltimore, I think, are crossing most lines, racial lines, class lines, are saying, I think it's time for you to go, Sheila, unfortunately.
It's a voice for integrity.
Right. Let's see what people think. 410-319-8888. Sharon, you're on the air.
Let me first start by saying, although I don't have or know in the legal terms or the responsibilities of policy and procedure, I am elated to see that she was found guilty. I will be more happier to see when she's convicted. My personal feeling is that no woman, as a female, no woman is going to or would be able to just excuse that a man gave her a $20 gift card and for your personal use. I just think the whole thing was, it's a lot I want to say, but to sum it up, I'm happy that she was found guilty.
I don't
think that she should remain in office while this process is being overturned or appealed or whatever.
One of the first things I did, I had to stop by a downtown building to pick up something that I left there, and the two security guards, one young, one older, both African-American, when I told them what the verdict was, because they hadn't heard yet, their fists went in the air and they said yes. Mm-hmm. So I'm saying there's a lot of deep-held emotion about this, I think, in the city. 410-319-8888, Mackenzie, you're on the air. Mackenzie,
Hi,
you're on the air.
Yes.
Mackenzie, you're on the air. Hello?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes.
Don't listen to your radio.
Yeah, turn the radio down if you could, or off, actually.
Okay.
There you go.
It's very loud. I can't really hear.
There you go.
I just wanted to comment and say, I've been reading on the net different blogs about how they think the reason why she was brought to trial and she's been investigated because she was granting more minority contracts. And I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Hello?
Well, Cheryl? I've talked to some minority contractors, and I don't get that sense that they felt like they had, you know, just carte blanche at City Hall. I don't get that sense at all. So I don't know that that's the reason. I mean, and that conversation, and let's realize that there's several conversations going on here. We have the legal conversation, which, you know, we as lawyers, you know, delve into this language and talk about what it means. And then we have the court of public opinion that we've talked about a bit. And then we have the reasons why the investigation was brought in the first place. And those are really three separate conversations. And it's and you could feel differently about each one. That's the really interesting part. So I don't get that sense, but I'm certainly there probably are some people out there who feel that way.
One point about the pettiness, this, what people say this is petty, which I don't think it is for the reason I said earlier. But remember, as Cheryl knows, a prosecutor sometimes believes there are wrongs that are much greater than what comes into evidence and feels that maybe for one reason or another it can't be proved, but they know it's there, and sometimes you end up with a smaller case than when you start out with, and that's part of the process.
That's true. That's an interesting point about, and you being a, Cheryl, you being a former prosecutor.
Absolutely, I agree, and I think I've made that point on this show before that, you know, this is what they came up with. We don't know what all they were looking at and what all they could prove. Other people thought they were going to come up with something involving the Dale Clark or the Mildred Boyer matter or something to do with that, and obviously they didn't have a case there. And my point before was, well, they found this. Were they to ignore it because it was a smaller amount of money, or were they to bring the charges? They decided to bring the charges. You know, I hate to see on a personal level, and I like to talk as a legal analyst, not on a personal level, but I will see, I hate to see this happen on a personal level. As an African-American woman, I was even surprised at my own reaction. I hate to see it happen. Doesn't mean I don't.
Right.
Respect the evidence that was presented.
There's an emotional, visceral response, and then there's a response that you have to be as an analyst. I mean, they're not always the same.
Absolutely.
The mayor's office called in, Scott Peterson, who's the mayor's press secretary, right? Asked to read this on the air. We need to correct an earlier statement suggesting that City Hall was locked down to reporters, which was not the case. The problem resulted from a miscommunication between the mayor's public relations staff and security. We will run a fully detailed correction tomorrow at 5. We only have more details, but want to offer our immediate apologies for any inconvenience or misunderstanding. So, that's from the mayor's office just now, from the press secretary of the mayor's office. 410-319-8888 is the number here. A lot of people are calling in. And let's try to get some really quick thoughts from our listeners. But when I call on you, you're going to have to make it very quick. We don't have a lot of time, and I'll let you all have a say here. We're holding on the longest is Ra. You're on the air. Ra, you're on the air. Ra, you there?
Hello.
You only have about a very short time, so we have to get a lot of callers through.
Oh, my God. That's great. You brought me in there for the opportunity. You could have given those gift cards to the owner of us, who was sending $7 of bills on whatever they need to buy, but they did not.
Ra, there's something wrong with your connection. We really can't hear you. Are you speaking into a phone or a speaker?
No.
Let's
asking people, our own people in the state, in the city.
All right. It's really hard to hear you, Ra. I'm sorry. Let's go over to T. You're on the air. T, you there?
TC. Yes, hello?
You're on the air, TC.
Yeah, I got to say, I'm not surprised that she was convicted. I mean, this is a woman back in January when those raises went through, and she wouldn't give hers back. It took public shaming her to give the raise back.
Oh, right, the raise. Right, that's right. Right, exactly. But if I remember right, didn't Stephanie Rawlings Blake take the raise and keep it?
I don't believe so.
I'd be wrong about that, but I thought I remember that.
Someone decided they would give it to charity or something, and someone else, I don't know. I don't believe that was the case.
Let's go to another caller, 410-319-8888. Ebony, you're on the air. Hi, Ebony, you're on the air. I don't know if it's our lines or yours, but I can't. We'll try to get on the caller and test that out one more time. 410-319-8888 is the number here.
Lots of callers.
Lots of callers.
Can't get them.
People want to get on in this conversation. I think there's a lot of feeling about what this means. I think that it's important perhaps to have a couple of discussions on this and maybe look at this in terms of its political ramifications. I think there are a lot of people. I was just reading earlier an email from Aaron Sepik, from who's the editor over at Baltimore Magazine, and his take is really interesting. I mean, he says that I'll just read a little bit what he said. He thinks the great lengths Republican state prosecutor has gone to take down a popular Democratic mayor are appalling, and I think he thinks the jury thought so as well. It's made millions of dollars in taxpayer money. He came up with $500 in misspent gift cards. And if he cares so much about the children of Baltimore, he claims were victimized, he could have given a portion of the millions he spent to take down the mayor to the children of Baltimore City rather than that. And we don't want to ignore outright wrongdoing, but I guess jury members were trying to balance their sense of immediate justice with a sense of broader justice. And I think that many were leery of removing the first African-American woman to sit in the mayor's chair from office. And after 7 days of deliberation, he goes on to say the notes requesting some smoke breaks might set a record. The jury ultimately found an uneasy compromise. She was convicted of a lesser charge. And so, I mean, I think this is people are going to wrestle with the politics and the implications of this.
Well, I don't have any problem with it. I don't know if the comment means a little fraud is okay, but big fraud isn't. I think that when you're dealing with public officials and responsibilities that the state prosecutor has given to him by the legislature, it's to prevent corruption in office, and it must be pursued. Now, he had his views. The jury seemed to agree, and I think that the city's going to be fine. Baltimore is a great city with a great heritage. There'll be a transition period. There'll be a different mayor if there's not a change in what we see on the horizon, and life will go on, and we'll be better for it. All of us will, including other elected officials.
No, I think that, look, I think that part of the issue here is the law and the law being broken and the arrogance of power. And what we haven't talked about is the larger question some people are writing in about, which I want to wrestle with, which is beneath all this stuff, again, is a mayor taking gift cards from developers. And we have to address the issue of the power of developers and business. I'm sorry, folks. I have to get my 12-year-old to fix my phone so they can do this in the air. The power of developers to have the kind of influence they have in this city and addressing that issue. That's really one of the underlying issues here. And I think that's what got so many people upset is the fact that the mayor took gift cards from a developer. And that's just, nobody can accept that in their heart of hearts. I think that's part of what's going on.
That's
here.
Right.
Byron, I'm sorry we didn't get to you enough today, but you're here in spirit as well as voice, if not body.
Not a problem. I'm happy to add as much or as little as I can. This is certainly a strange and shocking time for this city, but it's not going to be over soon.
Yeah. Byron Warnken, Associate Professor of Law at the University of Baltimore School of Law, has been one of our guests today. He is former Professor Paul Sandler, trial attorney and partner at Baltimore, D.C. firm of Shapiro, Sher, Gwinnow, and Sandler. Cheryl Wood, criminal defense attorney and owner of the Wood Law Firm, former state and federal prosecutor. I want to thank you as well for being here.
Thank you, Mark.
And Anthony McCarthy, of course, is always great to have my friend, co-host, and partner in crime. Well, I should say crime these days, should I? in the studio with me, host of the Anthony McCarthy Show from 5 to 7 p.m. Thank you, Anthony, for always being here.
Great to be here, Mark.
And thank you all for writing and calling in. And we will come back to this over the coming days. I think we have a lot to talk about beyond just the trial itself. And this is going to go on ad nauseum for a while, I'm afraid. And we'll cover it as much as we humanly can. Also trying to look at all the other issues that we face here in our country and city and community, and not just the trial of Sheila Dixon. I want to remind you also that the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union. Offering a full range of financial services, MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Stop by one of its 7 branches or go to mecu.com for more information. And the show is made possible in part by the Maryland State Mortgage Late Don't Wait program. For more information and personal counseling, the number is 1-877-462-7555. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producer is Justin Levy. We're engineered by Zachary Coleman. Our interns are Judith Lloyd, Brian Boone, Richard Good, and Gay Pinder. Our theme music is by Walt Matthews of Clean Cuts. to hear this show again, podcast any of our previous shows or tonight's show, and hear new additional interviews, please visit us on the web at steinershow.org. And for Public Radio, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.